You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
G'day world, it's Monday the 23rd of January 2006. It's about 9:53 in the AM and I'm sitting here in my study ready to do another G'day world with my new structured format, which I got zero feedback on from the one I did last night, so I don't know if you like it or you hate it, but screw you, I'm going to do it anyway because it gives me a reason to get up in the morning. Which helps. Tech news of the day from Tech Memorandum. I love this. They had the launch party for Naked Conversations last night in the US, which is the book about blogging that Robert Scoble and Shel Israel, my friends, have written. I've been very fortunate enough to hang out with Robert once or twice in the US and Shel once or twice in the US, and they're both great guys. They're a lot of fun. Shell's crazy, absolutely fucking crazy, and if you listen to this, Shel, you know I love you, buddy, but he's crazy as a tin full of cut snakes, I tell you. And that comes from being in the PR business for 70 years, I guess. But great guys, a lot of fun to hang out with. And it sounds like they had a huge party with 100 people last night, and that's the number one article, believe it or not, on Tech Memorandum. That's the biggest news that we've got in the tech blogosphere, is that Scoble and Shel had a big party that apparently my other good mate Buzz Bruggeman threw for them. So I've never been to a Buzz party, but I have shared a room with Buzz. We shared a room in Scottsdale, Arizona earlier. When was that? Last year. Man, that was almost a year ago we were in Arizona. February last year for a demo. Holy crap. I guess demo's coming up again soon. I haven't been invited this year. Don't know what that means. Anyway, sounds like they had a great time. The other stuff that's going on in the tech blogosphere, nothing new from what we covered yesterday. Apparently, one thing that is a bit interesting is that Disney are getting ready to take over Pixar, the Pixar board, Pixar Animation Studios, of course, that's run by Steve Jobs. And they're taking it over, where Steve's going to make about $3.5 billion. And it'll make him the single largest shareholder in Disney. Now, the background behind Pixar, as I'm sure most of you know, but when Jobs was ousted from Apple in the 80s, he went off and did a couple of things, and one of those was creating Pixar in 1986. And he basically bought the computer animation division of Lucasfilm, Star Wars, George Lucas's animation division, paid $10 million for it, and turned it into Pixar, and it's really done a lot of cutting-edge stuff over the intervening almost 20 years now that Pixar has been around. Can you believe that? Pixar's been around for 20 years? That sounds like a long time, really, doesn't it? But, yeah, so they've done a lot of films in that time, like Monsters, Inc., Toy Story, The Incredibles, Finding Nemo, A Bug's Life, all of which my kids have and absolutely love. And they tend to make films that adults love as well. The Incredibles, I thought, was probably the best superhero movie of the year when it came out in 2004, I think it was, maybe 2005 last year. Finding Nemo, Monsters, Inc., all good films for adults. So there you go. So Steve Jobs is the going to be the number one shareholder in Disney. Who would have ever figured that? Well, there you go. That's the crazy world we live in, kids. That's the crazy world we live in. It makes it even more, sort of funny having just read Cory Doctorow's book on Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, which is all about Disney World, as I said on the show yesterday, to imagine Steve Jobs, if he was running Disney, what would Disney be like? I'll leave that to your imagination. There's a lot of Scobalizer on Tech Memorandum. Robert must be getting a lot of links. There's a big article that's about why do I need Windows Vista, and it's on Mano's blog, Manuel Clement's blog. He's a Microsoft guy, I think. So there's a bunch of stuff going on about Vista and how pretty it is and the new networking stack. Here's the list of things that Manuel says why you need Vista. All new networking stack, all new audio stack, new UI and graphics layer, new search integration and file management, new fonts and readability technology, new kernel changes, new features for international users, new print technology, new installer technology, new sidebar and gadgets, new Sideshow, which is the external monitor for laptops, new updated applications like Windows Mail, new crypto technology, new RSS platform, new sound experience by Robert Fripp, which is, I think, the opening Windows theme has been done by Robert Fripp. Now, yeah, you know, as I'm sure most of you know, I worked for Microsoft for quite a few years, and, you know, I've been very critical about what they're doing or not doing with a bunch of their applications lately, particularly Outlook, which has become the bane of my existence over the last few years. But Windows Vista, yeah, look, it looks cool. It looks like OS X for Windows, for Microsoft users. I'm really hoping that they really knock this out of the park. I'm really looking forward to playing with it. It looks cool. It looks pretty. But, you know, looking pretty isn't everything for me. I mean, more reliability, more speed, less errors, less patches, less, you know, security downloads. I guess they're the kind of things that either make me more productive during the day or make me less productive. The ability to organize my information better, to get to it quicker, they're the key things that I'm interested in. And I know they have this new search, although the big chucking, what was that thing called where they were going to chuck everything into the one directory? I can't remember what the search was going to be in Longhorn. But anyway, I think a lot of stuff that was supposed to be in Longhorn, aka Vista, which was supposed to make finding your information a lot easier, kind of got dumped after it went through its 100th re-envisioning by the Windows team. But anyway, it'll be out sometime this year, hopefully, and we'll all get to see. Hopefully it'll run on my little tablet here, and I won't need thumping big, you know, modern processor to actually get it to run on my machine. Well, that's sort of the things that took my attention in the tech news today. Let's get on to a little bit of movie news. Now, some of you guys know I do the movie show with my co-host Ewan Spence, I mean, and sometimes Sue Sharman, who come on with us. But I thought I'd do a little bit of movie news, because it's something that's usually on my mind. The top bit of movie news for me today is of Ain't It Cool News, where Quint and Rav are previewing the Sundance lineup, because Sundance starts today, the Sundance Film Festival. A couple of really interesting films in here by the looks of it. Terry Zwigoff has got a new film out called Art School Confidential that is written by Daniel Klaus. Now, these two guys were the two masterminds behind Ghost World, that I'm sure many of you have seen. And Terry went on and made Bad Santa, which some people loved, some people hated. I haven't seen Bad Santa, but I have seen Ghost World, and I love Ghost World. There's another interesting film called El Hora by, I think he's Mexican director, Fabian Bielinski. Smack me up if I've got his nationality wrong. But on the movie show a couple of weeks ago, I reviewed a film that I actually very much enjoyed called Criminal, which was starring John C. Reilly, no relation, and Maggie Gyllenhaal. And it was a movie that was one of Mark Cuban's 2929 productions, done by Steven Soderbergh and George Clooney, as the production team, not as the directors, not directly involved in the production of the film. But I really enjoyed it. Now, it was a remake, here's the point, it was a remake of a film that Fabian Bielinski made in 2000, which was called Nine Queens, which I've been meaning to see ever since then, because it got a lot of hype at the time. I never got around to seeing it. Anyway, this is his new film, El Hora, and there's a lot of good vibes about that. Another one that I got to see is a film called Awesome. I Fucking Shot That. Now, by Nathaniel Hornblower, which I don't think is the real name. Now, the story behind this is the Beastie Boys, at one of their concerts, I love the Beastie Boys, gave out 50 mini DV cameras to the audience and got them just to film shit. And this film that's been edited together has been compiled from all the footage that these people took, which is a really clever idea. The Beasties are really creative. You know, they've done lots of really cool stuff over the last 20 years, and they're always on the cutting edge of media, I guess you could say. Their film clips, particularly the ones directed by Spike Jonze, have always been classics. I've got them on DVD somewhere, I think. Come Early Morning is a film directed by Joey Lauren Adams. Now, those of you who are fans of Kevin Smith and his films might remember Joey Lauren Adams. She was in a couple of his films, but primarily she was in Chasing Amy. She was the main female character in Chasing Amy. She's also been in Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back. She was also in Mallrats as Gwen. And she was Kevin Smith's girlfriend for quite a few years. They split up, and he's now since married to his wife. And she's actually in his new film, Clerks 2. But Joey Lauren Adams has gone on and made a number of films since then. And this is her first film as a director. Now, I don't know anything about it. I don't know anyone that's seen it or written a review, but she's kind of hot. I don't mind Joey Lauren Adams. She's kind of hot. The fact that Kevin Smith's had a dick in her aside, let's move on. The Darwin Awards, director Finn Taylor. Now, I'm sure most of you will be familiar with the Darwin Awards. It's been going for donkey's years now. It's sort of an annual website and email that summarises all the stupid ways in which people have killed themselves in the last year, most of which I'm sure are urban legends, but apparently somebody's decided to make a film about it, and so it's got a great cast. Joseph Fiennes, Winona Ryder, David Arquette, Juliette Lewis, and Metallica. I don't know what the hell Metallica are doing in it. But this sounds cool. Well, I like movies about stupid people killing themselves, so I'm in for that. What else is on this list? Wim Wenders has a new film. Oh, somebody's calling me. I better get that. Hold on. Hello, camera speaking. Hey, Mark, how you doing? Oh, okay, so that was Mark, the CEO of Podtrac, one of the new podcast advertising firms in the US. We're having a bit of a chat. Sorry about that. So anyway, I was talking about these films that are coming up at Sundance, he says as he brings up Firefox and tries to find the right tab. Yeah, so there's some cool stuff coming out. There's a couple of other films here that look really good. A movie called Factotum by director Brent Hamer. This is based on a book by Charles Bukowski about a lowlife that meanders through life, boozing it up, womanizing, gambling. Starring Matt Dillon, Lily Taylor, Marisa Tomei, and Fisher Stevens. Where the hell did they dig up Fisher Stevens from? And Marisa Tomei! Man, she's hot. That sounds great. I love Charles Bukowski's stuff. I've read a number of his novels and his short stories and stuff over the years. I love that whole low-life, alcoholic, gambling, bum kind of thing. It appeals to me. So that should be good. And there was something else here. One more film that I wanted to talk about. Oh, yes. A film called A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints by director Dito Montier. Described as a coming-of-age tale set in the mid-80s era Queens, semi-autobiographical, supposed to be incredible, and one of the films playing the fest that Quint is really jonesing to see. It's got Robert Downey Jr., Rosario Dawson, and Chaz Palminteri. Fucking love Robert Downey Jr. and Chaz Palminteri, and Rosario Dawson for that matter. Robert Downey Jr. is just one of the great actors of his generation, and he was in Good Night and Good Luck, had a sort of a medium-sized role in that, wasn't playing it his normal sort of extreme style, fairly laid back. Chaz Palminteri I haven't seen for years. He was obviously, you know, pretty big in the early, the mid to late 90s, but then kind of disappeared off the face of the earth. So I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, that's kind of that. There's a bunch of other great films. I wish I could get over to Sundance. I should be able to justify it with the movie show. If I didn't have other things to do, I would pop over there. Okay, etymology of the day. I'm going to just start at A's and take my way through, I think, these days, because I don't know. I've got to find good words. This is all about educating you guys. You need to learn. This isn't dick and fart jokes, people. This is about education. Let's find affluent. The word affluent. Not effluent. Affluent. Derives from 1432. It means flowing from the Latin affluentum. Affluere, flow towards, from ad, meaning to, and fluere, meaning flow, to flow, flowing. Fluent is a derivative, so fluent is something that, you know, flows easily. If you're fluent in a language, you can speak it in a flowing manner. The term affluent comes from a plentiful flow of the gifts of fortune, which led to affluence in the scent of wealth, first recorded in 1603. So if you are affluent, the gifts of fortune are flowing towards you on a regular basis. There you go. Bet you didn't know that. I certainly didn't know that. What else will we do? I don't know. How long have we got? 16 minutes. That's all right. Oh, I'm going to play... a bit of TPN news. That's what I'm going to do. TPN news. We've got a bunch of new shows in the pipeline coming up, some of them which are going to launch this week. I'll just give you a bit of heads up on. The Heretic podcast, you're going to see launch in the next day or so. I'm giving you a little bit of a preview for people who are listening to this show. You get a bit of an insight. Check it out, heretic.thepodcastnetwork.com. There's nothing up there yet, just, you know, the banner and, you know, there'll be something up there in the next couple of days, though. Now, Heretic, you may have heard me do an interview with Joseph Nassis, the author of this novel, a few weeks ago on G'day World. This is a great book, sort of in the tradition of horror novels and maybe Da Vinci Code. If you like Da Vinci Code, you're going to love this. So that's the biggest promotion I can give it. I've actually read the book and thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a very, very fast read. Basically, it's set modern day times with the Knights Templar that have become sort of the military division, I guess, of the Vatican, and it's set around a bunch of supernatural happenings and things going on. It's the first part of a trilogy, and I won't spoil it for you, but the author, Joseph Nassis, has received permission from his publishers, I think it's Pocket Books, to actually do a podcast of the novel. And it's going to be big. I think his publisher, Pocket Books, are a division of Simon & Schuster, I believe, in the US. Don't quote me on that. But it's a big, major publisher. And we believe this is the first time that a major publisher has given permission for a book to be podcast. So it's going to be officially brought to you, the official podcast brought to you by the Podcast Network. And also the Horror Channel in the US are supporting it as well. So there's going to be an official site that we'll link to, plus the official podcast is on TPN. And Joe's going to do a bit of a teaser introducing that this week, and then I think it's going to be a weekly episode. Now, Claiborne's has been huge on our site. It's been running since we launched TPN a little bit less than a year ago. So people obviously love listening to podcast drama. And some of the other novels that have been podcast out there have been very successful. So I'm really excited about this and seeing how it tracks. It's definitely a great book. I've chatted to Joe. He's a great guy, and I think it's going to be fabulous. One of the other shows that we've got launching, I think, this week is The Travel Show. Actually, I've got episode one sitting on a CD here for me to listen to. The Travel Show, I'm really excited about. This is being hosted by Martin Fluker. Martin lives in Yarraville, like literally several blocks away from me. He's a lecturer on travel and tourism at Victoria University and has worked in the tourism industry for many years. So this is going to be a regular show about just everything related to travel, where to go, people's stories on where they've been and what they like, tips for traveling to different countries, special kinds of travel. I think some of the early shows he's doing are on like mountain bike tours in different countries and stuff like that, surfing tours. He's a great guy, loves travel, loves tourism, and that should be a hoot. It's something that I can see is spinning off into a million different directions. Now I'm going to play a bit of a clip from Dead Serious, the show that Molly Carlisle does on TPN. Now, I don't know if many of you listen to Dead Serious, but it's a show that's been around for 7 months. Started off, Molly approached... She's Melbourne-based. Well, lives just outside of Melbourne, actually. Molly works in palliative care. And she approached me about the idea of a show around death and how we handle death in our culture and how we handle our own mortality. And I thought that was a fascinating idea for a podcast. And so she's done some shows around that, and it's kind of morphed recently into a show more around spirituality, personal philosophies, and for her 21st episode, she put the call out to TPN host and said, "Hey, I'd like to interview you guys on your philosophy on life and how you approach, you know, what your motivation is and what's important to you in life." And I really love listening to people talk about that kind of stuff. It's not the kind of stuff that we probably talk about on a regular basis. At least I don't sit down with my mates and talk about this. I do the Advaita show, which is all about that kind of stuff, but that's sort of a different circle of friends that I have, I guess. So anyway, Molly's been interviewing TPN hosts, and there's been some great stuff come out of it. Now, I've got a couple of snippets here that I'm going to play for you. It runs for a few minutes. It's Molly off a recent episode of Dead Serious interviewing, firstly, Wayne Turmell, host of the Cranky Middle Managers show, which is a show I'm really proud of. I love CMM. It's very funny, always very insightful. He does great interviews. And then also an interview with Des Parroz. Des has been co-hosting the Personal Productivity show with me for, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, and is also one of the hosts of our scuba diving show called Surface Interval. And both of them are talking about, you know, their sort of philosophy on life and death and fear of death and all that kind of stuff. So a little bit different for this show, but I think you guys are going to enjoy this. So bear with me. Here's Molly.
Hi, and welcome to Dead Serious on the Podcast Network. Both on a professional basis and a personal basis, what have been the life-changing things that have happened to you that have set you off on a different path?
You know, I really firmly believe that the universe kind of knows what it's doing and it will fill you in when you're ready. My career has gone through some interesting times. I was originally from Canada and was in the entertainment business. I was a stand-up comic for years, moved to L.A., immediately met my wife, and a couple years later, you know, have a child and had to join the real world. And next thing I know, I'm in Chicago. I was very blessed. My mother was a Baptist Sunday school teacher, and my father was her counterweight. And so I grew up in an environment that was both spiritual and at the same time, they were into all kinds of ESP and parapsychology. And so there was just always a lot of searching and, except for perhaps my mother, not a lot of firm belief that you had the answers, but the questions were worth asking. That's really kind of how I got here.
So her coming from a Baptist background, that would have been quite unusual for her to be so accepting of metaphysical approach to spirituality, wouldn't it?
You know, that paradox always intrigued me because she was very, very open, but you know, the one thing I inherited from her is an amazing knack for rationalization. And so she could make almost anything fit her worldview if she really wanted to. And yet at the same time, her spirituality was very, very simple. And that kind of simple spirituality kind of allows for a lot of other things. So you know, it was simple but not fundamentalist.
Now I won't be hasty, I'll give you a try. But if you really bug me, then we'll say goodbye. Now, I'll tell you what I really, really want.
Yo, tell us what you really, really want.
I wanna, I said I really, really, really wanna zig a zig a.
When you see a shadow coming from the distance, how does that make you feel?
I think one of the, it gets to another misconception that, yeah, there's really this fear out there that you know, that there's lots of sharks down there and that they're going to attack all the time. The reality is that divers are noisy, gassy type people, and by that I mean we're exhausting bubbles, exhaling bubbles, which are very noisy and actually are quite distracting to a lot of marine life. And sharks tend to stay away from divers. There have been very few attacks on divers, particularly recreational divers in Australia or anywhere for that matter, and I think that's largely because of that. So we, in fact, will often go to places where the sharks are at to get close to them and to see them. In Sydney, there's been a popular area called Magic Point, not as productive as it once was, but where the grey nurse sharks are there, and they can be 2-3, sometimes larger, 2-3 metre, or sometimes larger sharks. But they're not regarded as generally carnivorous. The silver-tip sharks up on parts of the Coral Sea, people go to try and dive with those. The great whites down in South Australia, as you're mentioning, but what happens there is usually it's done in a cage-type environment with those particular ones, because they can be a little different. But the reality is we rarely see them. I've done about 1,000 dives. I'm about 5 dives short of my 1,000 mark. And, I've seen one great white, and it sort of poked around and had a look and saw us there and stopped for a minute and then swam way off. And, my heart was pounding for that few moments, if you ask what it's like, no doubt. But that particular shark was just not interested and sped off in rather a hurry. All of that said, to see a grey nurse or another shark like that, there is an element of adrenaline there. But you'd be surprised, there's not that many out there.
Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Des. Thank you, Wayne. A little bit deep and serious for this show, I know, but get over it. All right. One last thing, bit of Australiana for the day. I'm going to tell you what flat out like a lizard drinking means. Now, I know I am flat out like a lizard drinking lately. This means if somebody says, yeah, mate, this is how it goes down in conversation. Say, g'day, mate, how you going? Yeah, not bad, mate, how are you? Oh, mate, flat out like a lizard drinking. It means really busy, basically. Now, apparently, the etymology of this is that lizards, when they drink, flatten themselves out. I don't know if that's true, but that's what it means. Flat out like a lizard drinking. Another one in the L section here that I'll throw at you because I think it's pretty good is larrikin. Now, larrikin is a bloke who's enjoying himself. A harmless prankster. A bit of a jokester is a larrikin. Not something you really hear in common talk these days. You often hear it referred to maybe older Australians who are a bit of a character. My grandfather, who passed away a few years ago, was known as a lovable larrikin. He did time for breaking and entering when he was a lot younger, which was a big family secret I didn't find out about until after he died, which I was really pissed off about because I would have loved to have talked to him about it, but apparently when my mother was very young, my grandfather got done for B&E. I think my mum was about 10, and he got done for B&E and went away for like a year and came back out, and it was this big family secret. And you're not supposed to talk about stuff like that. I would have loved that. If I'd known my grandfather had been done for B&E, I would have been so proud. I would have, tried to get all the stories out of him. But anyway, so he was a lovable larrikin. And that's G'day World for January the 23rd. I'm off to have lunch with Gary Wiz. And hope you all have... what else was I going to tell you? Something else that crossed my path. I got a great email from Rod Adams. Rod runs Adams Atomic Energy. I had him on the show last year talking about atomic energy. I had a lot of good feedback about that show. A lot of people learned a lot. And Rod's going to start doing a show for us soon about atomic energy, which I'm really looking forward to. Should be fascinating. We're just sort of getting the site ready at the moment. But he sent me a great email last night talking about how he was listening to a recent episode, riding his bike around Chesapeake Bay, and really liked my said when I did a little bit is when I had Richard Giles on, I got it cut off and I was talking. I did a little bit at the end saying, "Get off your ass and get on with your life." Rod said that he really enjoyed listening to that. Fellow speaking directly to him, I hope he won't mind me saying that. But that's good. It's great that somebody's listening, and you know, it sounds like a little bit sort of, I don't know, positive mental attitude-ish, this whole... I went through this period, not many people know this, but from like 1990 for 5 or 6 years, maybe 6 or 7 years, I was involved in Amway, which probably won't surprise some people. Your network marketing, and I didn't really have a lot of success at it, although I thought it was a great idea. I hate people too much, I think, to really be successful at a business like that. But I listened to a lot of positive mental attitude tapes during that time, and really ended up hating them with a passion. Because they'd say, you know, you're all right. You know, God wants you to be just the way you are. I'm like, fuck God. And I'm not all right. I was an absolute fucking screwy mess back then. And I still am, you know. But I was depressed and hated myself. I spent like 5, 6, 7 years trying to turn myself into the person that I wasn't. You know, trying to turn myself into a happy, positive, clean-cut, corporate, you know, businessman. And I'm not that person. I'm fucking dysfunctional and angry and pissed off and depressed half the time. And my brain is, you know, I'm brain damaged, man. Get over it. So anyway, it's great. You know, where was I going with this? Oh yeah, Rod, get off your ass. Yeah, look, you know, the last couple of years since I quit my job and jumped out and started doing this podcasting thing, you know, I swear to God, it has been the most amazing 18 months of my life. And even if it all falls in a heap and we never make a quit out of this thing and I have to go back to the workforce with my tail between my legs, I won't have regretted a day of it. I'll be a couple of $100,000 poorer, but, you know, and I'll probably have to eat a lot of crow. But it's just been amazing being at the forefront of this industry and getting to meet the people that I've met and getting to talk to guys like Chomsky and Kurzweil and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I can't recommend it enough, people. If you feel like you're not really getting everything out of life that you should, just fucking make some decisions and get out there and take some risks. What's the worst thing that can happen? You might lose some money, you might embarrass yourself. Who gives a shit? Get out there and put yourself on the bleeding edge. I wish I hadn't waited till I was 34 to do that. I wish I'd done it when I was 24. Anyway, no regrets. You do everything you can do when you can do it. I don't believe in free will. As anyone who's listened to the Advaita show will know, I believe that we make the decisions that we... The only decision that we can make at any given point in time based on who we are at that point in time. Anyway, I've got to go have lunch with Gary Wiz. Talk about some shit. So, nice talking to you folks. Hang in there. Get off your ass. Get on with your life. This is Cameron out.